Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Gals Podcast. Sharon Vornholt is your host and the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, where you will learn how to become a savvy real estate investor, make money, build streams of passive income, and create a lifestyle and a business you love. Whether you're a seasoned real estate investor or just getting started, this show is for you. Now, let's talk real estate investing.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your book. Now, the title of the book contains the words catalytic landlord. You say that landlords in troubled neighborhoods can increase their cash flow, property values, and the quality of the applicant by leading a campaign to improve the orderliness of the community surrounding their property. And that's just what we were talking about. That is very interesting.
Yes, that's a mouthful, isn't it?
But that's a really mouthful, and you wrote that.
But there's a whole lot in there. As I use the term catalytic landlord because this is a process of improving the neighborhood so that you don't get burnt out. Mm-hmm. Catalyst can be used over and over again, so that's important. It doesn't get worn out, mm-hmm. and a catalyst quickens a reaction. So I knew this neighborhood was going to improve without me. Mm-hmm. You would eventually get there. But I was arrogant enough to think that I could go in there and make things happen faster using some of my consulting processes, best business practices, and my handyman skills, and also I'm African American, so it gives me an advantage in the area where I'm dealing with other minorities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Honestly, it honestly does.
So, well, I hadn't thought about that, to tell you the truth.
That is true. So I felt I could all these things together. Now looking back at it, I see the trends on how other people have done it, and I see that there's some universal principles. So I think someone who reads the book can see the whole map in front of them before they start the process, mm-hmm. and that will also quicken the process by just knowing the milestones that you see.
Well,
so that's
yeah.
why I call it catalytic landlord.
Well, that's a brilliant definition, and certainly when you're the first that's doing anything or one of the first, you have to kind of figure it out as you go, but gosh, that is so helpful for anyone that wanted to go down this path to say, here's a roadmap for what I did, and this is what worked. And if it worked in my area, it's probably going to work in your area. So that's a huge benefit for folks that wanted to do the same thing.
Yes. And now, while I was working for St. Hope, a nonprofit, for 3 years, mm-hmm. I was able to immerse myself in inner-city redevelopment and also reading from other case studies, and I went to Harvard for 2 weeks on leadership, and I was able to study other people's redevelopment processes. So mm-hmm. this is a synthesis of the best practices from other people's and other neighborhoods and other states. They all have some common features.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I put it all into the book. I couldn't find a book that tied everything together and said, hey, you know, you can pretty much guarantee any neighborhood revitalization is going to start with a litter pickup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter where you are.
You should probably get a campaign going to, this is something your VA could do for you. She could get you set up to speak at all these RIAs, and you could get your message out faster to these types of groups.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Mm-hmm. So I can see now, if you're in an immediate area and you've got your own little core area there, how all of this works together. But how do you scale that? How do you make this an extension of that area or of a neighborhood and get people involved so that it expands, I guess is what I'm saying.
So it's a lot of neighborhood engagement. That's if you have time. If you're short on time, you need to connect with other landlords, and you know, your VA can always find out who the owner is or get a message out And that's kind of been my approach. Landlords or other business owners, they don't want to be the source of problems for the neighborhood, but they don't have they're not necessarily want to be the solution either. They don't really want to be the person running the front, but they will support you. I have no problem raising funds from other landlords or for efforts or that I try to do, or there's no lack of support for anything that I've asked another landlord to do.
Well, that's interesting.
It helps their cash flow.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's a definite benefit to them. So what would you say to landlords in general? So many of them shy away from investing in these types of neighborhoods. And let's face it, there's a lot of challenges and problems going in that you wouldn't have in a nice, stable, maybe a little bit more suburban neighborhood. So what's in it for the landlords that take on this challenge?
So what's in it for them? So that, you definitely need to be careful on where you start your campaign. You know, so I would caution them to start on the edge, and there's the fabric, the fringe, and the fray. I would encourage them, hey, find the fringe and work from there. Now, what's in it for them is not only there's a lot of equity to be grabbed from starting with a property that has could look just the same as a property in a nice neighborhood physically, but it has a bad reputation on the area, and that drags the property values down. Cash flow could be great, but the property value is down because of the reputation in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So that landlord who's involved or near someone who's helping to improve the reputation of the area will capture the equity as the property values are restored to normal market values.
Mm-hmm. So they can get in cheap and improve the property, and ultimately they can make a lot more money.
Exactly. By the reputation changing, if it's keeping their property the same, the reputation changing, and more people interested in that area, that will lift your property values right there without putting in granite countertops.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, what I saw so much within my own RIA group was that some investors that invested in those inner city neighborhoods, they almost treated the properties as cash cows, but yet they were kind of disposable properties.
Exactly.
It was as though they were there to make the money, but they weren't there necessarily to improve the neighborhood, and they had in a lot of cases bought these properties so cheaply that when it fell down they would just walk away. And that's just the honest truth. And I always had a problem with that whole business model.
Exactly. So one thing I found out when I got bored with my 3-unit building was that money wasn't enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, I was interested in a legacy as well. I'm sure anyone who's had any little bit of financial success realized, hey, it's not all that it's cracked up to be your bank account number. So I wanted to create more value than I was consuming. I wanted to help the area that I felt like could help. So That's a very big part of it for me. Why I'm in this area and why I'm trying to establish communication with all the other landlords, and these landlords that look at it as a cash cow, they sure don't mind someone trying to improve the area.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you make it simple for them, they will and give them an avenue where they can contribute financially, doesn't take any of their time, then you're creating you can create a system of getting some of this money to where it's needed, where it's being effective, and really help help them play a role in bringing up the neighborhood as well.
So how do you connect with these other landlords? Do you just, you know, what's your method? Do you all have a group, or is it your RIA group, or do you have a different type of a group?
We have a different type of group. One, the phase that we, so it's different, there's different stages as you go through a redevelopment process. You know, there's the stage where you have to connect with people because there's a problem in the area,
mm-hmm.
or there's a violence, or there's a drug dealer, things like that. So that was one stage that I connected with other landlords. And then there's this lag phase that we talked about where the area is nice, but people from the outside don't recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you connect with landlords on a promotional phase there, because you're trying to get the word out about what's good is happening there.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a PR move to help people from the outside and creating buzz and things like that. And then there's the phase where once people from the outside recognize the neighborhood is been changed, and then you kind of slide into the phase of being just a normal landlord anywhere. You don't have to really do much work at all. So the answer, I say all that to answer your question. The phase that's the tough part is this lag phase. That's when we have an annual national night out. That's one thing
mm-hmm.
that we participate in with our neighbors and with other landlords. And I use that annual event to expand the number of landlords that I talk with and my email base, my email list for landlords in the area. I ask them for $30
mm-hmm.
For the event. And also during the year, I send out another email saying, you know, what's going on, just to keep everyone updated. So
yeah,
that's how I do it now. I use that as an excuse to connect with other landlords and communicate with them.
Well, you've obviously got a system set up, and as you know, from whether you're communicating with distressed sellers or landlords, you have to keep your name and your whatever you're doing in front of them. So that's a process, or otherwise they just drop off the face of the earth, and that's the end of that.
That's exactly. It's similar to your marketing campaigns that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Not as frequent, but the exact same reasons.
Mm-hmm.
All the benefits of timing, finding out what's selling, and having your name there when someone needs something and they can reach out to you because
mm-hmm.
you're top of mind.
So if you... once you get the properties and the area revitalized, obviously you can ask for better rents. And in
yeah.
turn, I would think, well, of course, it does increase your property values, but the quality of your applicants, I would think that you would be able to demand and pick from your applicants and just attract and demand better applicants for your properties.
That's exactly it. It's effortless now. The people that come to my property now, I don't give them the speech anymore about what's going on in the neighborhood and what's going to happen, and you know, making them promises and things like that. It's the area selling itself now. People come, they see what we have to offer, and they just think it's a normal neighborhood. I was in our local coffee shop. And I didn't recognize anyone there,
mm-hmm.
nor could I find a place to sit because there's, you know, people from the medical center and the law school. People were studying, using the Wi-Fi, and the place was packed.
Yeah, that's incredible.
This is the area that Starbucks couldn't. Starbucks came when we started our revitalization efforts, but they didn't make it there. It was one of the stores that they closed. Just didn't work out for a number of things that they weren't doing well, but this new group that's in there is very neighborhood focused,
mm-hmm.
very neighbor focused, and the neighbors support it.
Well, that is just really, really cool. And I think you've kind of hit upon it. You know, that's another part of building a community. You've when you have a neighborhood and there aren't any stores, and you see that often in bad neighborhoods, there's no grocery store. People have to travel outside of their area. There certainly wouldn't be a coffee shop or a Walmart or anything like that. So once you can be successful at building a community, I think that the whole area is going to turn around.
That's exactly it. You know, it really hinges on business and also the competitiveness of the inner city. There's, you know, that's a whole conversation about whole different conversation, but that's really important. Being competitive is the way to sustain your business. One maneuver that I used was buying, you know, just me stirring the things up was to buy gift cards at these mom and pop stores that were in the neighborhood, and give them away at the neighborhood meetings. Have them, you know, for a new person, first time person, give them a gift card to that business.
That's so a great idea.
It's a way of marketing for that business, and it's also a way to make sure neighbors understand that, you know, you need to go and support them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also teaching the the business owner, hey, you need to reach out to the neighbors.
Right. It's a two-way street, isn't it?
It is. So I'm meddling in that, making sure I strengthen that connection there. All these things are good for my property value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's good to have somebody like you to do that. In my area, there are still a vast amount of what I call low-end properties and some of the rougher neighborhoods that were, they're not really that bad if they had what you have managed to create, a community where people care about it. And because already in a lot of our inner city neighborhoods, there are already parks and things, that type of infrastructure there.
Right.
But businesses have a tough time, an individual business, the corner little grocery store, or the one guy, he just has a terrible time making it, and he lives with being scared all of the time because he's it, and he's kind of a target, to be honest about it.
Right. So there's a whole lot of things there, Sharon, to talk about. But I like to use the analogy of starting a wave in a sports stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen anyone try to start a wave and fail?
No.
People, you know what I'm saying, stand up and they yell and they sit back down and they hope the people next to them do the same thing.
Do the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, so sometimes those things don't work. They don't go all the way around the stadium. It's because the person trying to start that wave is working by themselves.
Oh, okay.
You need to work with a group of other folks who are all working in sync with each other, and who are communicating around them and are in the area that is well that can be seen. You can't start a wave if you're in the nosebleed seats where no one sees you. You have to be in a good high visibility area to start that wave. So the little store owners that are in, you know, these corner shops that are tucked deep in the neighborhood, it's very difficult for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're lonely business owners, aren't they?
Yes, it's very difficult for them. The best thing they could do is connect with a larger group and connect with other groups, but you don't see that much reach out. It's not a good spiral there.
I think like you said, it's a process, and I think if more people understood the process, maybe more people would be willing to jump in, especially if they didn't feel like they were alone, if they had a landlord's group or a group to help them take on this process, because you're right. If you're the one, it's tough to get that kind of momentum going.
Yes. Yes. But one thing I was really trying to contribute is putting it in a map type of format through my book. And I'm mostly interested in getting the information out about, hey, there is a process. You know, I didn't, I went through it, but I wish I would have seen the milestones, and I wish I would have, you know, known about all the other people who have done the same thing and who could have made it a lot easier on me. You know, Neighborhood Watch has been around for a long time, and it still is difficult to pull together all the success stories from Neighborhood Watch. People, for some reason, it's just hard to come about that information.
Well, I know it is. It's hard to get that demographic to come together and give that information and that sort of thing too.
Right.
So your book, Building Wealth with Inner City Rentals, Success the Catalytic Landlord Way. This book, when I went through it, seems to me like it's really a roadmap that for anyone who wants to invest in a redevelopment zone, they can take that and improve the area and the inner city neighborhoods. Would you say that's a fair thing to say about your book?
I think that's perfect. I should hire you to summarize, like my son. That's very good. Yes, I was trying to exactly do that, create a roadmap so that someone can understand what zone or kind of what area that their neighborhood is in. Is my neighbor in the lag phase, or is it in the safety zone? It's in the new norms area, and then know what to do, what actions to take.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
I know it's very detailed, and you've gone to great lengths to explain things and why you do things, and there's no doubt that you're very passionate about this project. So what can we say to other real estate investors to get them to take on this challenge? Not just be the landlord that's there to collect the big rent, but the guy that's there to make a difference.
Well, there's two sides. From an investor standpoint, with this information, you can have the confidence to buy more properties while they're cheap. Because you can understand how to take it through to fix the problem. So if I had this information, I would have bought more properties earlier on, you know, definitely. And then from the standpoint of for happiness, you know, the financial part is not necessarily going to make you happy. And, you know, my whole family participates in this, and it's very enjoyable. It's a source of pride for all of us. My kids as well, as far as actually making the neighborhood better. It's similar to, I know you enjoy rehabbing homes.
Mm-hmm.
It's even better than that.
Because you do the whole neighborhood.
Yeah. So you're playing a role. You're playing a role in as being a little match as far as helping things get organized and just very enjoyable. So it's a very enjoyable way to make a lot of money. That's what I would say.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you added more rentals along the way?
I am now. I've been traveling for my job for the last couple of years. And now that I'm back, I'm currently working on a 16-unit, trying to acquire that one. And then the 16 unit next to that. So I'm trying to add 32 units right now.
Ooh,
over the next couple of years as things pan out. Now these are right neighboring my existing 8 units. So just increasing my little fiefdom, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is, I think the rule, which I, by the way, I never really followed, but it just didn't work out that way. But they tell you to invest all in the same area, and they tell you to invest within 7 miles of your home. But I completely blew that one away when I was investing, because I didn't live near where I was investing. But I think that's supposed to be the perfect formula for you not losing your mind within it, although I'm not sure that's possible. But
you definitely want some distance, that's for sure.
Well, really. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on today, and I want to encourage everybody to go over to Al's site, thecatalyticlandlord.com, and you can find out all about Al. You can read some posts he's written. You can get his book over there. And Give some serious thought to how you too can make a difference in your community through real estate investing. And Al, thank you so much for coming on today and taking the time, got up early and to do this show from California. And I just appreciate it so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Sharon. And again, thank you for all that you've done over the years. I've really enjoyed learning from you. Can't thank you enough for you're always a couple steps ahead of me. So I appreciate that.
Well, I don't know about that. I think maybe we're just on a little bit different steps. I think that's what it is. So, well, I want to thank everybody for listening. And please head over to iTunes and give us a review. Let us know that you like the show. And this is Sharon Bornholt of Let's Talk Real Estate Investing, and I'll be back soon.